I am Doug Friedman.
And I am Meredith Levy.
And this is Your Mental Breakdown,
the podcast.
We are your co-hosts, licensed therapists, and people that don't annoy each other too much.
Except for when we start to record this late in the evening and we are both out of our minds.
You know, part of why we record this late is because we've been talking for like an hour and a half already.
Literally. I mean, it's not a bad thing. We like each other so much.
And not about the podcast. We were just chatting.
No. Yeah. So guess what I watched last night? I'll just tell you, The Joker. I've never seen it before.
Oh, wow.
And I never saw it before. I really wanted to, but I didn't know in what capacity, but I just knew there was a lot of like mental health stuff in there. And sometimes I tend to shy away from that stuff just because I do it all day long.
Right.
I watched it. And first of all, Joaquin Phoenix is possibly one of the best actors I've ever seen in my life. I've always thought he was amazing, but that fucking put it over the edge. I was like, holy shit, just phenomenal. And it was an important statement about mental health. And also
totally
just fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm reading this book right now. I literally don't know what it's called because I read a book every 2 or 3 days, but in it, the guy is got a lot of mental health issues, but the only thing he watches is, is Murder, She Wrote, just like VHS to, I don't like however many of every series of Murder, She Wrote. So good.
You know what I'm reading right now? The New Science of Adult Attachment, the book Attached, Amir Levine and Rachel Heller. Uh-huh. Anybody that has any inkling of attachment issues or what that means or relationship issues.
Or a beating heart.
Right? It's a great, great book for that.
Really?
Yeah. Ironically, maybe it's not ironic at all. Some of what Drew and I were getting into in the sessions you guys are going to hear coming up, and like it's all about attachment.
Yes.
And it's just a really interesting, I think, lens to look at some of these things, especially as we talk about relationships, not just relationships with our parents that shaped us, but the relationships that we've been in historically and continue to gravitate towards.
Oh, it sounds amazing. And in my mind, I want to read it, but you just read it and give me a synopsis. Okay.
Well, that's exactly how I've been and why this book came with me to Colorado and I did not crack it there. Ah.
And by the way, do you know what I did for the first time the other day? I played
Showered?
Sudoku. That was funny.
Sudoku?
I played Sudoku.
You've never done Sudoku?
Fuck no. I would do crossword puzzles and I just leave that little Sudoku right next to it alone. And
oh man.
I did one and it is so hard. First of all, I had no idea how to do it. And I had to read the instructions like 10 times because I was very confused. I was like, wait, you have to add up this and that and that. And it was so hard that my brain hurt. And I was like, okay, because they say that's really good for preventing or Alzheimer's. And then I was like, killed it. Great. Did it. 2 hours. I don't know how long it took. And then the next week I tried to do another one, got it all wrong. And I was like, fuck this. Now I give up.
Are you doing it in the newspaper? Is that where you're getting them?
Yeah, in the newspaper. Ooh, you have it on your phone.
I do. I go through waves and flurries of totally getting into Sudoku at night before I go to bed. Like I want to like work my brain out for a minute and then shut it down. Yeah, it's a good brain workout. I like that.
It is. It's such a good brain workout, which is why I tried it. But I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was a good brain workout until I couldn't feel my brain anymore.
Speaking of brain workout.
Yes. I was just going to say that.
And you know, wait. We can't segue yet. You ready for this? You ready for this?
Yeah. Go. Tell me.
I am almost busted. I did it once.
Fuck. Shit. Fuck.
And you did not. You know, it's so funny to me because I did it once and knew like, cool, if I do it this once, and it was the night after we recorded, like, cool, I'm going to shut down. So at least I get credit for doing it once. Awesome. I didn't even remotely come near it after that.
Damn it.
I did not shut my laptop down any other night 6 of the 7 days in the last week. Nope. It was just running in the background.
Ugh, damn it. Okay. I'm going to just try it again. No judging. Let's not judge ourselves.
No. If at first you don't succeed, try again.
Oh, Dad. That's so sweet. Okay. So listen up.
Listen up. We will be back to break it down in a little while. And there you go. Take it away, me.
Over our last week of our conversation, I've been thinking a lot of just about my parents and where they're at and where I'm at and what's going on with everything in life. And I think I really got caught up in the fact of not just finances. I think that was more of a trigger of where I was feeling with my parents, in the sense of like, but that was like my last string holding them to me. And so I think that fear of losing all of that altogether was, that sucked. And I shut down because of it. I'm starting to understand that and why I shut down.
Why do you shut down?
Fear of the unknown, which I think I'm getting better at. I've never walked through something like this with so much pressure already on my shoulders. I'm starting to get that mountain and going on the other side. But I think it's been a little bit more clear in the last couple of days of like, I will be okay in finances. And like, my parents have taught me a lot in the world of money, but I've never really done it myself. I'm starting to learn how to do it by myself, which has felt really good. But it's that pressure of stuff I just don't know about yet.
You separating from parents and being your own. And that is the unknown. That is a little scary. That idea of like one thread still attaching me to them. I want to tug at that a little bit because that works not just for them as safety net, but it works for when you were saying my mom, like talking to her every day. Or my mom, is she using? What's she doing? And me being hyper vigilant about taking care of her. It isn't just that thread of attachment, it's cutting a cord.
Right.
Which can be scary. And maybe you never really got to do that because it was too fearful, too scary, too abandoning.
Yeah. I want to play, so you love to do this, the Vader and the Yoda. And I think that's my Vader. And the way I've been, really since yesterday, it kind of popped in my head when I woke up. But my thought process for like that thread, that one last piece, I flipped it and was like, well, what if I think about it like I'm cutting the red rope and I'm cutting through something and now I'm on the other side and now this is my grand opening. And that's kind of like the metaphor I was thinking about with it, because it was exciting to cut that red rope instead of, oh my God, this is my last thing with my parents.
What does cutting the red rope mean to you? What does that feel like?
The independence versus the abandonment. I think me cutting the red rope is really allowing myself to feel the ability to do it on my own. It's my grand opening and it's my movie. Whereas flip side was, oh, well, if we cut this, you're over there and I'm over here. We're not doing it together.
Right. If I cut it, then we're separate.
Yeah.
And separate means not okay, not connected.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between connection and attachment sometimes.
Yeah.
Connection feels good. That's talking to a friend. It's having that attachment sometimes is a little different. It's telling me that I'm okay because of this other person, because of this other thing outside of me.
Codependence, right?
That's right. It can lead to that. Absolutely. I mean, healthy attachment is fine.
Right.
That's why some people get married. That's why some people stay best friends forever. Like, sure, that stuff can be fine and really healthy and enhance our lives. And some people are fine just being connected, having a lot of friends, and being very social. It's when we attach to something and our well-being and our security depends on that attachment. Not even that other person, depends on the attachment. That's why we're talking about cutting the thread or cutting the red rope. We're not talking about getting rid of the person at the other end of it. We're talking about severing the connection, severing the attachment.
Yeah, and I almost feel like I have tried to sever that connection before by cutting that string. And I don't know why I'm on my metaphor game right now, but I really am.
Bring it. You know I love it.
Yeah, so I almost feel like I've cut that string before, but I've tied knots in it. And now I feel like my string is so many knots in it. I'm in my very last one. And I'm like, oh no, if I cut this, it's kind of like my last one. And so I almost feel like it's more so like I've tried. I've always tied it back up because it just didn't feel right. Maybe not feel right. I didn't feel confident enough in all of that.
You might still not feel confident enough. That's okay. And I see the nodding, and that's more Green Beret. Oh, wait, I know who I am. I can deal with the situation.
Yeah.
And reminding yourself that, because what's coming up is that not feeling safe and not having that one last knot at the end of the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I don't have that to hold on to, then what?
I don't know. I've never done it. I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We want what's comfortable, what feels safe and stable and secure, even if it's not healthy and not truly stable and safe and secure.
Mm-hmm.
I want my parents. I want to stay connected. I want to stay attached. I want them to stay involved. I want my dad to go into business with me, right? I mean, all these things. I mean, that's where that comes from. I want that because I haven't done it and it's scary.
Yeah. And like, as I'm navigating all this too, being as it is so new, I think I'm having new feelings coming up along with all this. I was talking to my dad, I think it was yesterday or the day before. He was like, all right, well, I want to have like weekly talks just to check in. And how I felt it was I want to check in on you and make sure you're doing what you're saying you're doing, which made me just feel like a fucking kid all over again.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to have that conversation of like, yes, dad, I still want that tether, but I need my space. I want you to love me, but I don't want you to love me.
Well, maybe it's not about love. Of course, I want you to love me.
Right.
Maybe it's about involvement. Maybe it's about dependence. Maybe it's about your independence.
Yeah. And I think I'm trying to find that independence. And I think I'm on the black and white spectrum of all in, all out. And it's either my parents are with me all in or not at all. And again, I it's new navigating of what does it look like to have my parents in my life just as like my parents and not as like a safety net.
Yeah. You cringe when you say that. What was that? What was that cringe?
It's weird because me and my mom specifically, you know, I've always been her safety net and she's always been mine. It's never been like we're both in good spots. My dad has been in a safety net in a different way. He's always had the I got your back card, but it's never been like an emotional I got your back card. I'm interested to kind of see what happens in the next couple of months. It's not a bad thing. It's not the best thing, but it is what it is, I think.
Let's scratch at that a little bit because you said something and you've said it to me before. I recognize it pretty well. You recognize it pretty well. Let's move towards it, which is that idea of I want to push you away and I want you to come closer.
Yeah.
I want you to come closer. Why?
It's my squad. That's my family. A lot of people are included in my family. But I think when I have that secured and confident in that is when I feel confident.
What's that secure and confident?
Codependence is what it sounds like now that I'm saying it. I don't think I've really experienced life for myself yet. Mm. I think it's been a lot of group effort. I think I'm really good with group projects. I don't think I'm the best at doing my own projects.
What do you think that's about?
I think going back, even like as a kid in kindergarten, as soon as my mom would leave, like that's when I'd start bawling and I'd feel super alone. And even as a kid, I didn't understand why she would leave. And then that kind of like grew as I became a teenager and snowball effect and got bigger and bigger. But I think at the end of the day, it has to do with me and my mom and me feeling like she's just always going to leave.
Let's look at it like this. You experienced a trauma with your mom, not the one you think, the very first one when you were ripped away from her, when you were born.
Yeah.
There are some schools of thought that say that that's the first significant trauma. And if you think about it, you were safe, you were nice, you were protected, you were in this really nice room, womb, right?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. You were being fed, you were being held, everything was wonderful. And then you get ripped out of that. And if we think about that in terms of, like you said, in kindergarten, getting dropped off, that's the separation that's getting ripped out of.
Right.
And every time you talk about wanting to do something independent or wanting to be left alone, needing some time for yourself, there's that, but wait, I need that security. I need to know I'm okay by virtue of they're still here.
Right.
As I'm saying this, what's happening over there?
I'm thinking a lot about just other relationships that I have and kind of seeing how me and my mom's relationship, and not directly correlated to like the trauma, just like generally speaking, has really affected the way I perceive relationships. It's really affected the way I'm emotionally attached to people.
How so?
I mean, I basically put my life on hold constantly, like over and over and over again, in order to fit into somebody else's life, because I feel like that's where I feel wanted versus where I want to be, of being okay by myself and not being alone. I don't think that's what I'm trying to say, but being okay with not talking to friends for a day or two, or if somebody gets mad, that 10% of disappointment. I mean, that's helped me more than like a lot of things in my entire life has, which is crazy. It's a little thing. Just that alone, I never wanted my mom to be disappointed in me, and I would do anything to make it better. And I'm still that way with everybody else now. I'll drop everything.
Yeah. Why do you think? I got a theory. I want to hear yours.
I think I'm so afraid to be alone, lonely, that I'll wash my, what I like, to be with somebody else and kind of chameleon into that. Just for the satisfaction of what that is.
Yep. I'm glad you went first. That's it. Really. It's something, again, going back to birth, it's a natural thing. I don't want the separation. I want to be as one. I don't want to be alone. And I'm sorry to say that we are alone.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to be lonely. That's where all these connections come from. That's where maybe having secure attachments in our life, not codependent ones. Not ones that I need to maintain this attachment, this thread, in order to feel safe and be okay. No, we need that safety and that okay to come from internally ourselves. But I can still have connection and good, secure attachments, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But some of how you're talking about this hits that fundamental piece of we are alone.
Yeah, and I think growing up too, I mean, I come from a really small family, like a really, I can count everybody on two hands and still have a couple fingers left over.
Right.
I've always hated that about the way I grew up. I looked at a lot of my friends with all these cousins and aunts and uncles, sure, and going to these big shindigs with 30, 40, 50 people. And it's been a struggle for me having one or two solid people in my life and not having the 3, 4, 5. Do I go back and forth a lot on it? And I think that's the lonely part of my life right now. I think growing up without like a big family, I never really knew what that was like.
Yeah.
Now I'm navigating what it's like to build my own, and I don't really know how to do that quite yet, but I'm trying.
Exactly. You're not just trying, you're doing. There's another Yoda for you. Do or do not, there is no try. Part of what you're describing is connection. It's also community. I mean, I have that one or two, but not that 3, 4, 5.
Right as you said community, my head went to church. And I haven't been to church in like a year.
Especially because of the, you know, pandemic and what that looks like now, it's just different. Especially after
old girlfriend,
you leaned back into church a little bit.
Yeah.
And that meant something to you. That meant a lot to you, actually. That's community. That's plugging back in and connecting to a sense of community. That feels really good. And that's really important to you.
Yeah. And with that all being said, I really stopped agreeing with how a lot of my community in that church portrayed themselves, because it was so unauthentic. It's been confusing me, because it's like, I've always thought of that community as like my safe spot, even outside of my own house. I would go to church when I was 18, 19, having a bad day, and it was just my safe spot to go, you know, kind of like the gym. Nobody bothered me. I could do my own thing, and I could just clear my head. And now the trust. I think I have really bad trust issues. And I know that comes from my mom. I can tell you multiple stories of where that fell apart. But I think me not trusting people too is one of my big things. So I just don't trust people.
I don't trust what in that?
I don't trust that they're being who they say they are. I don't trust that they're being authentic. I'm afraid that long-term I'm going to get hurt. Even short-term. I think short-term I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt. I think that really hindered my growing of relationships. And even like, again, going back to mom and dad, I don't trust my mom with a lot of stuff. I think that's translated into a lot of my other relationships. I don't trust that they're going to do what they say they're going to do.
Which is what?
It can be a lot of things. Oh, okay. Here's a good, this is related, but unrelated. Yesterday, a guy, one of my homeboys, actually, I'm literally helping him with some masks and printing and doing some stuff for his company he's trying to start. But I got like $300 invested in this to try and help him. He has like $150 invested into it. Cool. No big deal. So he hits me up yesterday and was like, hey bro, can you send me a refund? I don't think I want to do these anymore. And I'm like, nah, man, like we're already done. Like everything's done. He's like, yeah, no, I don't want to do it anymore. And I'm like, you're one of my homeboys and you're asking for $150 back. Like, the fuck happened? And I had one of those responses that was completely irrational to what it was, but I completely blew up on him. I was like, fuck you. I'm done. If you ever want to talk to me again, we can be friends, but I never want to work with you again. Slept on it, really been thinking about it. And it's because I trusted him. And $150, it's a lot to me right now, but in the grand scheme of things really isn't. But it was a trust thing. And it was like, bro, I trusted you that you weren't going to do me dirty. And now you are. And you're one of my boys.
I don't think it's an irrational response. I think it was a disproportionate response. It was a response that carried a lot more weight. We talk about feathers and bricks, right?
Right.
A ton is a ton. You are already at a ton. You have an accumulation of trust being broken, people not following through with their word, people not coming through for me, people abandoning me, all of this stuff. So he throws one more rock in that bag and the bag fucking breaks and you lose it. So the response was disproportionate.
Right.
And maybe we can own that a little bit.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Where it comes from and what you're holding is still very heavy. It's still a ton. And that there's something there that we can scratch at right now if you want to. Because that idea that I'm holding all of this disappointment, all of this abandonment, frustration. And I think a part of it is, yes, people not following through with their word, that's annoying. I wonder if maybe that leads us back to something that we were talking about a little while ago.
I go up and down. I don't know if I really like sat down and really thought about it. I think you could probably shed some light on this. But when I'm like going and working and head down in it, I'm fine. As soon as I stop, like literally sit down for like 5 minutes and sit and think, that's when it all shit breaks loose. I think that's related to this because I'm just such an emotional person that I don't know if it'll ever change. I don't know if I'll ever get over. I will. No, I will get over the whole trust thing. I think when I see those mile markers, because I've proven that to myself already, I just haven't quite seen anybody on a personal level from the level of me being like
little Drew,
of being able to express what that looks like and who that is, what he's been through and the transition that I'm trying to do with
big Drew.
It's a process. And I want to talk about my mom and really dive into that. Cause I think that's the root of like a lot of where this shit comes from, but I don't want to blame her for anything. I'm in a spot in my life where I don't know. I'm happy. Yeah. I'm good.
We can go there a second, but let's bring it back because you're moving away from something and I want to stay with it.
Yep.
Let's take one piece out. Blaming mom. This isn't about blame.
Okay.
We're not talking about your mom and what she did.
Yeah.
We're talking about
little Drew
and what his experience was and what he started to see and understand and how he feels even now.
Yeah.
Let's move towards that a little bit.
I've been trying to bring this up for a while, so I'm just going to say it. But this was like one of the biggest things story-wise. I was in junior high. I was going to a district dance. My mom and dad come pick me up. My mom's like slumped over in the chair. She wakes up. She was like, oh, when did you guys get here? And I don't know what it was, but I told her something earlier that day. And I was like, mom, please keep this between us. Like, this is just like, please, please, please. This is just between me and you. And she brings it up in the car in front of like 10 of my friends and like everybody. And I'm so embarrassed. And I'm like, mom, like, come on, this is one of the biggest days of my adolescent life. I'm going to my first district dance. I'm finally like talking to a girl. Like, it's such a big night in my life. It was that trust right there where I said to myself, like, I'm never going to tell you anything again. This is it. I'm done. I'm not trusting you with anything ever, ever again. And then I think not a week later is when she tried to commit suicide. And so like all of that together really fucked with me because I was like, I'm done with you. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want anything, any part of it. I don't trust you. You fucked me over it. And then that happened.
Yeah. How was that telling me that story?
Felt good. It's something I think about a lot, but not in the moment think about it. So it's nice to share that finally. But it sucks. It sucks to think about those kind of experiences that I went through with my mom. And like, there's a lot of them. When I think about that one, now I'm thinking about my football when she fell over in the fucking road. And then my graduation. And then at my fucking Boy Scouts derby. It's just all these things come up. I try not to think about it.
What happens when you do?
It reinforces a lot of the way I feel.
Which is what?
That I shouldn't trust people right away.
We're not talking about people. We're talking about mom.
I still don't trust her. I love her. I always will. It's my mom, but I don't trust her. And I don't really take what she says for anything other than her saying it. Even when she says, I love you, I know she loves me. It's really just words.
Yeah. What do you make of that? How's that feel?
It sucks. Shit sucks. It hurts.
Yeah.
I guess mentality-wise, if I can't trust my mom telling me she loves me, I can't trust anybody telling me they love me.
Right.
And I think I find a lot of that doubt with girlfriend, too. I think a lot of my reassurance issues come from the fact that I don't trust what she's saying is true.
Yeah. You said it. How can I trust anybody? Ultimately, you're not going to trust yourself.
Yeah.
How can I feel lovable or loved when I can't trust anybody because I'm so hurt that my mom betrayed that trust? And it's not about blaming her for that.
Right.
She was, is an addict.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean she doesn't love you and try her best. It also doesn't mean she doesn't make mistakes. She does. And your experience, I mean, look, you're carrying around a narrative that's incredibly impactful. That's reinforcing something continuously. I can't trust. I don't trust. I'm going to be abandoned. I'm not okay. I am alone. And that's scary. And I hate it. And I don't want to be. Man, even the story you just told me, I went off on her for fucking up.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tried to kill herself. What's a natural conclusion we'll draw with that?
It's my fault.
Yeah. Is it?
No.
Did you think it was?
I didn't know. I wasn't like, oh my God, this is my fault. I just didn't know what was going on. I think that was a lot scarier.
We might have some awareness at the time, but it's not consciously going to creep in. We're not going to Yoda ourselves by a long, long, long shot. All we're going to know is something happened and it's not okay. And ultimate trust was broken.
Mm-hmm. There was another one too. This one just popped up. I was sleeping. I was probably 16, 17. And I woke up for whatever reason. It was just one of those random middle of the night. Oh, I'm up. And something pushed me to go downstairs. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get some water or something. And so I walk and I see downstairs and there was like paramedics everywhere. My mom was on the stretcher. And I turned around and went back upstairs. And I was like, I didn't want to see that. I'm going back to bed, pretending like it was a nightmare. When my dad talked to me about this one, he didn't say it was a suicide attempt. He just said that she took too many pills or something and it fucked with her blood. And so again, I had no idea what was going on. But for that one, I felt like I turned my back again. Not that if I would have walked down, it could have been better, but at least I would have been able to say goodbye. And really random, this one popped in my head too. Same thing with my dog. My yellow lab growing up was my best friend. That was my 18th birthday. I came home from a trip and went out with my parents that night to celebrate. Came home and my dog was on the ground, just not doing good. And so my parents were like, do you want to go to the hospital with us? And I was like, I don't know if I can. And they're like, okay, we'll see you later. And left. And didn't come back with them. And I think the thing that hurt the most with that one was just not saying bye.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah. And I think that's why I try and text my parents all the time. So I just want to say bye if like that happens, you know?
Yeah. I hear that. Is there something really scary about that? And there's also something I hear a little differently. I've walked through this a few times myself with clients, with myself.
Yeah.
I lost a dog. We put him down in my house.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful and horrible. We've talked about that. Told you that one. I did say goodbye in the most beautiful way. And it was still horrible. And I thought about it for a long time. Still do. And I'd get really upset about it. Whoever I'm with will go, why are you so upset? I'm like, man, I wish he knew how much I loved him. I said goodbye. It wasn't that. It's, I wish he knew how much I loved him. And 100% of the time, whoever I say that to just looks at me and goes, are you kidding me? Of course he knew.
Yeah. And it's just, so we're on the same page. I'm not crying because of my dog. It just,
Even if you were, that's okay. It's okay.
And just the emotion of like not being able to say goodbye sucks. Yeah. And to your point of like, I just want my parents to know how much I love them.
Yeah.
But everybody in my life, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, you do know. That's important to you. And look, there's a reality here, which is we're not going to be here forever. We don't know how much longer we're going to be here at all.
See if we make it through the end of the year.
Right. But what we do know is how we're going to be here.
Yeah.
Can I be loving while I'm here? Can I show love? Can I receive love? It's not about saying goodbye. It's about saying hello when we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Trust me, saying goodbye doesn't make it good.
Yeah. Yeah. Same shit with Biggie's, my buddy that just passed away, and I didn't get to say bye to him. It's just like, I feel like that's my thing. It's just like, I don't get the closure.
Yeah, we don't get that. We often don't get that at all.
Yeah.
There's an old client, I think I might have mentioned him to you, had the aneurysm, then had cancer, got through it. There's something when he was around 20 years old, came back from college, playing basketball with one of his best friends. They were both quick to getting angry. And they got angry, threw a basketball, threw punches, and they got into a bloody fist fight, like bloody fist fight. The guy's ex-girlfriend called my client and said, hey, I'm worried about him. Will you call him? And he said, fuck no. We just got in a fight. I'm not going to call him. The next morning, he found out that his buddy killed himself that night.
Jeez.
And I know you know what that is like and what you carry with that.
Yeah.
What matters is the narrative that we craft, which isn't just, I didn't get to say goodbye, but I might have contributed to this. I might have done something about this. And the reality is, again, we don't have any control over that. There are no guarantees, except we are all going to be gone at some point. Nothing lasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard. I can guarantee you saying goodbye doesn't make all that go away.
Yeah.
Might help it. And we find ways to say goodbye, whether it's through church and spiritual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Even what we're talking about now, we're saying goodbye to mom in a sense.
Right.
I want my own bank accounts. I don't want her involved. So of course it's going to trigger some of this stuff.
Yeah. Makes sense. Sucks. This shit sucks.
It's certainly not easy.
No, but I hope it's worth it.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, I think so too. But I mean, throwing back into
old girlfriend
past stuff, her whole, well, you left everything to go for your job. That's stuck in my head since I left. I think that's another reason I've been struggling a lot. I mean, I've struggled shit since I moved here. But
right.
Like, what the fuck am I saying? But on that specifically, more than anything, been my a top thing for me of guilt. Kind of that same mentality of I left everything And I feel guilty for it. I feel guilty for not saying goodbye to my parents in the way I wanted to. And I just kind of left. I was so afraid of everything else that I didn't even think about it. And now I'm carrying that with me. And it's like, come on.
Come on what?
I don't want to carry it. I shouldn't have to feel guilty for wanting to live my dream.
Yeah. You are still so raw for how sad it was for you and what it felt like for you that I don't ever want anybody to feel like that.
Yeah.
We don't control that. And we've still got some healing to do around this for you and what it feels like for you. Telling you this from day one, it won't go away. It gets quieter, gets easier, doesn't get easy.
Right.
Sometimes it just processes through quicker because we can move towards it and understand it, forgive ourselves, not blame anybody else, maybe have compassion for them.
Yeah.
And hopefully apply that same compassion to ourselves. You've been through a lot, my friend. A lot. And what you learned along the way was I have to be hypervigilant. I have to be there. I have to be attached. I have to be perfect or at least good.
Yeah.
That's a lot to try to live up to.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Trying to live up to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to not.
Me too. Be nice.
Yeah. Let's tweak that a little bit. It is going to be very nice.
And I think why I'm so excited to move is that's my first stepping stone of my own. All this is mine. It's not where people want me to live, where my parents want me to live, anything other than where do I want to go?
This is actually the first, a little sigh right there too. This is you taking care of yourself.
Right.
And that's independence.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. So literally give yourself a pat on the back, man. I mean, this is you like, really, this is you growing up. This is you experiencing this. And it's scary. It's new. It's different. And you're doing it. We're going to walk through a lot of this because this is, it comes up.
Right.
And the idea is you're not going to be in tears every time. Sometimes you might, whether it's your dog triggering it, could be something with parent. We don't know what it could be. It could be girlfriend. Okay. That bag that you're carrying around, there's an accumulation of all this stuff.
Yeah.
And to just throw it on your back and keep going, not okay anymore.
No, and how I felt just now was how I was feeling the other day when I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. I think we were talking about it. Exact same feeling. Exactly the same. And I don't know what triggered me then. I feel like I'm carrying a lot right now.
What we'll learn and what we'll walk through, a lot of those feathers and bricks and rocks and boulders and whatever else is in that bag is not yours. You've taken it on from everybody because you, I'm air quoting this, because you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to. Let's give you a break if we can.
Yeah.
We're going to look at what weight is yours, what isn't. We're going to look at some of that, what it is that you do carry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the what's my weight, what's not.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one thing tangibly you can start looking at in the next week. Some of the deeper emotional stuff, yeah, we'll walk through that when it comes up. It's there. I mean, I knew day one with you, we were going to have to go here. We weren't ready yet. We had a lot of other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff came up.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Look, we're here now. We'll walk through that. What you can start to build awareness of. And I say awareness because it's about recognizing that it's happening, not necessarily stopping it. Just being aware of what's your weight and what's not.
Yeah.
And something like that, the $150, that's a rock, but it became the weight of a ton with it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just build awareness. Like, okay, that's not my rock. I don't need to take that.
Hell yeah. I love homework.
Good. Take note. What's my weight? What's not?
Absolutely. I'm on it.
And we are back.
We sure are. Okay. So yeah. Oh, this was a great episode. It was very heartfelt and great. Just going to say great again. So it started out, you guys were talking about attachment, sort of like an attachment versus connection, right?
Yeah. We were talking about attachment styles and just the difference between attachment and connection. He said something I thought was really cool because we were equating it to how he's been getting more independent from mom and how he's feeling that, but still feeling conflicted about wanting to feel their love and be loved by them, but also wanting to be independent. And we talked about cutting the cord. And then he said, which I thought was really cool, I think of it like cutting the red ribbon. Like, this is my grand opening.
Yeah. And when he said, I'm really on my metaphor game or something, it was so funny.
Right, right.
And then he said something about he's tried cutting it before, but there's like a lot of knots in it, and that he gets close, he just ties it back up in a knot because he gets scared. So I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear him kind of looking back at his style of attachment and his style of dependence or codependence or independence, like kind of looking at what that means for him.
Right.
And we've done enough groundwork and he's gotten more comfortable with sort of the language of how we talk about this, that now he's getting to explore it in a way where he's got some tools and some framework for talking about it.
Yeah. And he talked about, I think one of the things he said was about his dad, that his dad wanted to have like a weekly chat or talk or check in or whatever. And right. Drew took that to mean that he wants to check in and make sure that he's doing what he says he's going to do, and made him feel like a kid.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting. I wonder if that was his dad's intention or not. It's hard to know because we weren't in the conversation, but to me, I was like, oh, that's sweet. And I thought he said, was going to say that he wanted to check in to make sure that he's doing okay. And then he said, to make sure I'm right. doing what I'm supposed to do. I was like, oh, and then talked about the, like, I want you to love me and I don't want you to love me. And you brought in like, well, maybe it's not about love, which in my head, I was like, well, how do you know it's about love? And then he said that and I was like, we're so smart.
Right. It's funny. It reminds me of, God, I read this somewhere. Just because you said you love me doesn't mean I feel loved by you.
Yeah.
It's a great line because it's how we express love and how we receive or feel love can be different things. And if his dad in a very loving way was saying, yeah, let's have a weekly talk, that might have been his dad's way of saying, I want to stay connected to you. But right. if Drew took it as, oh, you're just checking up on me, like, no, that's not okay. I don't like that. You're just yep. making sure that I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. Like, that's not what I want from you. It's almost like he's saying, he didn't really say it in here, but I want it on my terms. I want to talk to you when I'm sharing something with you that I want to have from you. It's different.
Right. I was really curious when he talked about how never having had a big family and that church is community for him, and it hasn't been in a long time. And he said he was having trouble with the church community and how they portray themselves. And he said they're not being authentic.
Right.
And I was like, how the F do you know if they're being authentic? That was like my initial thought, right? Like, that's such a judgment. And maybe there's more to it that I don't know.
Correct. There is more to it that you don't know, because we had to cut some of it because of what okay. the content of what he was saying was too identifying. It used to be for him, if he was having a bad day or things were in turmoil somewhere in his life, he could always count on his church community to ground him.
Right.
And he was realizing, like, no, it's not grounding because these aren't my people. And that's a function of also something that he said very early on in the podcast that you picked up on. There are no good people in LA, that he actually is developing his people and he's got a few really good friends.
Yeah.
So he's leaning into that more, and that's different now. And he sees it there now.
Yeah, no, that's great. And then, you know, a lot of that launched into the trust thing and just trusting people in general about being authentic and saying that they're going to doing what they say they're going to do, and how he kind of blew up at his friend. He said he had an irrational reaction. And to me, I was like, well, was it effective or ineffective? And was it congruent? And I think you said something to that effect.
Right.
Rational? I don't know. Who knows? And I liked what you said. You throw one more rock in the bag and it breaks because you already have so many fucking rocks in there.
Right. And that's something, you know, he and I have worked on quite a bit and continue to work on from this point. And that was the idea of, I've said it before, the disproportionate response.
Yeah.
When your response to something isn't in proportion to what the thing was, it's probably because you're carrying around more of the weight. If somebody hands you a feather and you react as though they just handed you a huge boulder, it's indicative of you're carrying a lot of weight. In fact, that's the nature of a trigger.
Right.
Is the trigger could be a feather, but what's the added weight and everything that it carries? And it's for the person that triggers the other person, not the person that got triggered and is having the response. It's the person that doled out the feather or that triggered somebody. They're going to feel oftentimes surprised and defensive.
Attacked, mate. Yeah.
Attacked, absolutely. When that response seems disproportionate to what they were doing. And some of them like will own like, oh, it was a feather. Like, I'm sorry. When the reaction is so huge and the response is so huge, it makes them question like, well, was that a feather? Should I not do that? I'm sorry. It's an interesting dynamic. And my point is to see it actually from both sides. But if you recognize somebody is having a disproportionate response to you, then they're carrying stuff that has nothing to do with you.
Totally.
Likewise, when you're having a disproportionate response, if you get called on it, because it's hard to see it when it's happening to you, if you recognize, oh, wait, this is coming from the accumulation of stuff, whether it's stuff that's happened throughout my day or stuff that's happened throughout the last 5-10 years of my life.
I used to very much have really incongruent, big, big, big reactions. And I didn't really know. I just thought it was the other person just like not caring as much as I did. I look back now and I'm like, wow, 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 wow. A lot of times afterwards, people feel badly. But a lot of times, like I said, I didn't even realize it was incongruent.
Right.
Like, you're so emotional. You're dead inside. What do you mean? How are you not upset right now?
Right. How come you don't feel this as big as I do? And it could be a wonderful feeling. Like, how come you aren't overjoyed by this amazing thing that's happening? It can be a superpower. And as with all superpowers, you need to learn how to hone that and work with that. And that's something that I think even as he and I were talking about it, he was seeing that some of his reactions and responses were from carrying a lot of weight around, were from this abandonment that he feels, this fear that he feels that's been there for so long. And the separation that he feels. And that's where I threw in what some psychology theories believe is the first traumatic experience that we have is birth.
Right.
That's our first and biggest separation.
It sounds like a horribly rude awakening.
Totally. We were in such a blissful, like contained space where all our needs were being met. It's great.
Totally.
And then we're just thrust out and here we are. Separate. And then we cut that cord almost immediately. It's some of the first trauma that we experience, but we don't necessarily recognize it as trauma. And some psychological theories do, some still don't.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, I want to talk about my mom because I know she's all the root of all my problems, but let's not. You're like, meh, let's. Let's do that. And he said, yeah, he doesn't want to blame her. Obviously, you can talk about someone and express your feelings and have thoughts and feelings without blaming them. But so he told that story about being in junior high and that I think that was when he said he's wanted to talk about it with you, but he just never has. And going to the dance and she's like passed out in the car and she says something in front of all his friends that he specifically asked her not to.
Right.
He got mad, was like, fuck you. I don't trust you. I'm never telling you anything again. And she tries to kill herself a week later.
Right.
That has to be horrible.
Yeah. It's so interesting because as he's making these links, which is great, he did kind of say, I think this is affecting all of my relationships.
Right.
Trusting people or not being able to trust people. Part of talking about it is just getting that story out and saying that, being able to acknowledge it in some way. And it was interesting. I think I even mentioned it to him when we did the episode on the podcast with Wyatt, another client who's in his 40s, and he had a drag out bloodying each other fight with his best friend after college. The friend's girlfriend said, he's having a hard time. Can you call him? And Wyatt was like, no, I'm pissed at him. Fuck that.
Yeah.
And the next day he killed himself, or he found out he killed himself. I think he killed himself that night.
Right.
And it was something that Wyatt was saying, yeah, I had to deal with a lot of the guilt that I felt and carry that with me. And it took a lot of work to let that go, but it's still going to be there. And I think similarly for Drew, he's still going to have that. And you guys that have been listening to the podcast can hear in him something going wrong when he's not around and not connected is in there somewhere. And it's not just going to go away with the snap of the fingers. Might always be there to some degree.
Yeah. So you brought that up with your different client when he was talking about that story. When he was 15 or 16, he woke up in the middle of the night to get water and there was like paramedics everywhere and his mom had took too many pills. And
I think he even said, I just pretended it was a nightmare or a bad dream.
Yeah. Went back upstairs. Yeah.
Dad didn't even say it was a suicide attempt. He just said she took too many pills. He pieced it together later. What he remembers in the context of us in this session was, I chose not to have anything to do with that moment. I just went back upstairs and went back to bed. And the next thing that popped into his head was with his dog. I think he had just gone out for like his 18th birthday. So of course he's going to have a good time. And then parents were like, do you want to come to the hospital with the dog? He's like, no, I'm all right. And that was it.
I was wondering why you didn't bring up your wife passed away and not being able to say goodbye.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because you and I are transparent. We share some things with our clients as it serves the client. And in this moment, telling him about my wife would have shifted the dynamic entirely.
Right.
Because of his relationship to me, if he hears about that, we're now talking about that and it wouldn't serve him at all in that moment. Again, the thing about being transparent as a therapist is you have to know when it's going to serve your client and when it's not. So for me, what I wanted to highlight to him was, yes, the thing about not being able to say goodbye is tough. We do carry that. And what's at the heart of it? He was talking about his dog that passed away. Like, okay, I had a dog that we had to put down also. And being able to say, I did get to say goodbye. We put him down in the most beautiful way. We curated it. And
right. He
and I have talked about that before. I've mentioned that dog to him before and putting him down.
Yeah.
So it was a frame of reference for him that was about me that he already knew. So it wasn't going to pull him out of his story. But it was going to highlight and help me get to something else with him.
Right.
He was making it about, I wasn't there. I didn't get to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And being able to say to him, well, look, here's a place where I did get to say goodbye. It's not what it was about.
Yeah. It maybe doesn't make it different. Well, and you said, first of all, another brilliant, it's not about saying goodbye. It's about saying hello while we're here. I was like, oh, so sweet. And then you said, well, saying goodbye doesn't make it good. And sometimes it makes it, sometimes it makes it way better being able to say goodbye. I think it just depends. Yes, it doesn't make it all tied up in a pretty bow, but it definitely can make it way better when we do have that chance.
Yeah, we were talking about the closure aspect of it.
Exactly.
One of his good friends that he grew up with that passed away recently for him, and he went back for the service in Seattle. He had the session with me where he said, yeah, I didn't get to say goodbye. I didn't get to have that last conversation with him.
Uh-huh.
And it's tough because you never really know that the last conversation is the last conversation unless it's on somebody's deathbed. And
Yeah, exactly.
That's where, again, my unique experience with my dog where we were putting him down that morning. And it was horrible. It was beautiful and horrible. It was both.
Yeah.
And what it was really about and what I was trying to get at with him is that idea of, and what still affects me is I wish I had done more for my dog. I wish he knew that I loved him. I wish I fed him better food. I wish I took him for more walks. I wish I never yelled at him ever.
Yeah. You could not have been a better dog dad. You literally did all those things times a million. And for you, it still wasn't enough in hindsight.
Exactly. It's still not enough. My wife, when she was really digging at it with me, was saying, well, why? What would that have done? And it really got me to, so that he would know I really loved him. And she said, well, he did know. To me, that's what this is about. It's about Drew wanting his parents to know how much he loves them, which he did say.
Right.
And that's when I said the line, I think, about saying hello while we're here. It's about showing them the love while we're here.
Yeah.
It's not about saying goodbye and having that closure. It's being able to express that love now.
Absolutely.
And I love that he and I have worked on this. We've been building up to this because it doesn't mean I have to show them love the way he had been showing love to people a year ago.
Right.
Which was buying them gifts, dropping everything for them, always being there and always texting them every morning so that they'll text back. You know, it wasn't that.
Yeah.
And I think he got it this time and he really understood it that way.
Yeah. And he was very emotional. You could just sense the like,
yeah,
he was very authentic and expressing his emotions.
I can almost hear and sense the weight being lifted off of him.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of a session, we just said it. And it's sort of what you were saying about me being enough for my dog. Like it's still, I was a great owner to my dog, a great companion to my dog. Yet I still feel like I didn't do enough. And for him, that idea of, man, I would love it if you could just live instead of live up to.
Right.
Because he's always trying to live up to, like he'll compare himself to his dad. He'll compare himself to the best version of him that he thinks he needs to be.
Right.
It's really, really hard because we're constantly trying to live up to this standard or this thing that is never going to be enough. We're always going to find some way.
Yeah. And then at the end, you said, okay, here's your homework. He's like, I love homework. I was like, me too. That's awesome.
Right.
Pay attention to what's his weight and what's not. And I was like, oh, that's a good one.
It's sort of like Feathers and Bricks 201. Like Feathers and Bricks 101 is understanding that things are stressful and they come to us in the form of light things like feathers or heavy things like bricks. The 201, the next level, the advanced course is recognizing that some of these things that we take on aren't ours.
Right.
There's somebody else's weight. And we think like we're helping by carrying someone else's load. Okay. Sometimes we can do that, but it puts weight on us.
Yeah.
And sometimes not taking it on, man, it just lifts a burden off of us if we can.
It's going to be really interesting to see if he was able to do that during the week.
Yeah. I say all the time to clients, this stuff doesn't get easy, but it gets easier. As we do it, as we build these muscles, as we build this awareness, you're going to have an easier time doing it because we're now aware of it. And if we become aware of not taking on other people's feathers and bricks or how much of ours we're taking on, it's not easy, but it gets easier and we feel lighter. Just that idea of, man, like him taking care of himself, not everybody else.
Yeah. And it gets easier or it can get easier. You got to practice though. You got to practice totally. Whatever it is, the awareness, because great. I mean, awareness is huge. It's the first part to everything. And then what, right? Then there's the steps after that.
Right. This session for me was so huge in terms of where he is and how he's thinking of things.
Yeah.
Because now, and this is the point of therapy to me and why I think therapy is about the relationship and about the incremental progress over a period of time, not a soundbite, not a one size fits all thing.
Right.
We are now in our relationship as clients and therapists at a deeper place where we can actively look at some of these patterns and understand where they're coming from and how they're impacting our daily lives. And we can do something about it.
Totally.
And start breaking these patterns and creating new neural pathways, new ski trails. It's so much of what I love doing with people is building to get to this point. And we're there. What Aww. He does with it is going to be amazing to witness. And it's
totally.
I'm still working with him to this day, like almost a year past where we are in the podcast. And it's really cool.
So amazing.
The levels that you reach are just so much deeper. And it's such a different life. And it's, I think we'll probably have Drew come on and kind of look back at his first year of therapy. It's weird because he'll have the perspective of doing it from having an additional year of therapy that you guys haven't heard yet, right? So he's 2 years into therapy, but he's going to be looking right. back at the first year of his therapy and comparing it. It's pretty cool.
So amazing. Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah. Well, it's all coming soon. So guys out there, come on back, stick around, check us out on all the social medias. We're all over everything these days.
We're all over. Yeah.
On the Facebook, we've got a Facebook group and discussions there. We've got
on the Facebook, all
on
of
the
it.
Facebook, on the Instagram, on the TikTok. And if you haven't already, check us out on your iTunes and give us a rating or a review. That really helps us out. We're trying to get the word out to everybody that we're here. Therapy's here. It's good for you. It helps.
And we're awesome. And so are you.
That's right. And we will talk at you next week. Bye.
Bye.